Hello, everyone. Welcome back to this is going to be the final installment, final episode of the Summer Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Davis. I am the managing editor over at movies.com. And joining me all summer long, as he has, is Mr. Sean O'Connell, the movie's content director over at cinemablend.com. And Sean, this is going to be our final episode of the summer specific podcast where we're talking about summer movies.
Don't remind me.
It's so sad. Yeah, it's we're actually at the end of August. It is the end of summer. And Sean and I will, of course, continue podcasting. We're definitely going to be podcasting from the Toronto International Film Festival, which kicks off next week. And we are hitting the big film festival season and the awards movies. And we're going to talk about all of those in the next couple of months. But now it's time to, I think, look back at summer 2014 and see what it gave us.
Well, I mean, it sort of delivered on all the things that you'd expect from a summer season, right? I mean, we had a ton of sequels. It seems like summer now and summer forever is going to mean superhero movies, because I don't think that trend is going away anytime soon. All of these studios are solidifying their superhero franchises and locking up actors for phases 3, 4, 5, beyond. And it's funny that, like, you know, some studios have to rearrange their plans. I think when we started the summer and Amazing Spider-Man 2 was going to take that franchise in one direction and it didn't work. But then X-Men Days of Future Past also wanted to go down a certain direction, and that sort of solidified their path. And we still have a lot of Warner Brothers movies up in the air because we don't know where they're going between Batman versus Superman and the new Justice League movie. So, you know, I think summer sort of defined what we expect out of it, but I think it also left us with a lot of questions.
It did leave us with a lot of questions, and I want to start off. We're going to sort of dissect the entire summer in different categories for this podcast, and we're going to comedies and smaller movies and tell you films that we like the best in these categories in case you miss them, and you can kind of catch them because a lot of them are going to arrive on DVD and Blu-ray within the next couple of months. But Sean, let's start out. Is there a movie that best defines the summer of 2014, in your opinion? And I think I already know what you're going to say because we spoke about this previously. We both think it's the same movie.
We did, yes. And it's kind of, I mean, I guess it's obvious once you state it, but it's Guardians of the Galaxy. And it's so funny, like on all of our podcasts leading up to and going through the summer season, Guardians to us was always a bit of a mystery in terms of, we think it's going to do this, but it might miss. And it's one of those properties where it wasn't a guaranteed home run, because it was Marvel sort of striking out into new areas and asking audiences to sort of follow them along as they got a little bit strange. Talking raccoons, a hero that looks primarily like a tree, no real bankable movie stars. And that's no offense to anybody in the ensemble of Guardians of the Galaxy, but they didn't have a Robert Downey Jr. They didn't have, you know, even Hemsworth and Evans, I think, were bankable movie stars before Guardians hit. And that movie just sort of, to me, hit all of the numbers that you go down the chart of, this is what we're looking for in a summer movie. It was very funny. It was action-packed. It was imaginative. It moved like a freight train. It introduced this new world that we all wanted to, like, continue to explore immediately. We know that there's a sequel coming. I think we're all pretty psyched about that. So it just sort of seemed to fit the mold of what we want from a summer movie. And it didn't feel like it was changing itself to plug into that mold. It did what it wanted to do. And it existed as a really fun, perfect sort of summer movie experience.
Yeah, and that's that word, fun. It's funny. I've talked to so many people who've seen Guardians of the Galaxy, and like that word is the first word that comes out of their mouth. Like, oh, so what'd you think? It was fun,
right?
And I thought about that a lot, and I felt that way with a lot of these movies that came out this summer. I walked out of them, and I was like, that was fun. That was fun. Right. You know, I feel like that word sort of sums up the summer. In one word, it was fun. And right. And yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy was a fun movie that did a lot of things that maybe we don't see as much anymore during the summer movie. You know, it was a nice throwback to sort of some 80s sensibilities and that ragtag team kind of stuff that maybe it felt a little bit more of that era than it would today. Well, but the soundtrack was just great. I mean, here's a movie soundtrack that not only topped the charts, the Billboard 200, but it also is the first movie soundtrack to do that. That's full of songs that are previous released songs.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting.
It was cool.
That was my big complaint about Captain America: The Winter Soldier, which I don't think is a bad movie at all. I like it a lot, and it fits well into what Marvel was trying to do. But I didn't think Captain America: The Winter Soldier was a fun movie, and I still always think that like these comic book movies need to be entertaining. They need to have some of that humor to it. And Marvel, less than DC, you know, didn't really go into the dark and the gritty the way that these DC movies seem to be bathing themselves in. And I thought Cap, you know, it tried to put some humor here and there, and it interjected a few lines from Falcon, and Black Widow had a few funny lines, but it didn't have this sense of fun that Guardians just really tapped into. And it wasn't that it was silly. It was just, it had an energy to it that I think I look for in summer movies, and that we don't get that often anymore, because everybody feels the need to copy from the Nolan playbook and be serious and appeal to adults, when you can appeal to adults and still be funny and fun and entertaining.
Yeah, well, I feel like Cap was going for a more sort of 70s thriller vibe.
Sure.
And it was successful in that regard. I really liked it. But yeah, it ends on a somber note. I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. is completely dismantled, and these guys are all on the run, and everything that they thought they knew is now gone. And so you're left sort of saying, that was cool, but was it fun? You know, Amazing Spider-Man 2, I walked out of that, I had fun. X-Men Days of Future Past, I had fun.
Right.
You know, Edge of Tomorrow, I was like, that's fun.
Right.
Guardians of the Galaxy, that was fun. You know, these were, you had a good time. And so I think that's sort of, you're exactly right. But like Man of Steel, like, I don't think I'm going to walk out of Batman versus Superman and say, that was fun.
Yeah, exactly.
It was just so fun. Like, I'm going to have this big smile on my face, because I have a feeling that movie's going to be a little dark and gritty and grounded and all those buzzwords that they're using these days to describe superhero movies.
So Justice League will be born out of pain, you're trying to say. It's going to crush your spirit.
Somebody's going to be standing in the theater hitting you while you watch Justice League. You're going to have a button. If you're not feeling enough pain, you're going to be required to push a button, and someone dressed up as the Flash walks in and beats you.
Well, even the early shots of like Batman and Superman, they're very somber. They're, like, Superman's standing in the rain. He looks pissed off. Batman's got a sad meme already. It's true. Whereas everything with Guardians, like, their posters were vibrant, and it was like, here's a raccoon firing a machine gun. Isn't that a blast? And it was. It really was. I give James Gunn all the credit for that.
Yeah, it just goes to show you the different styles that they have. I think I would say from about Thor on, when Marvel teamed up with Disney, I think some people at Disney helped inject that a different kind of flavor in these Marvel movies, whereas maybe Iron Man 2, The Incredible Hulk were sort of still in the Dark Knight generation of movies.
Right.
I think that they turned a corner and said, we're going to add a lot more humor, we're going to have a lot more fun with these films, and they were really successful with it. And DC is still, I think, going to hold on to that Dark Knight vibe and say, this, we were very successful with these, and there is a place for these darker superhero movies, and more power to them. And I guess as we're segueing to the superhero movies of the summer, because there were a lot of them.
Right.
I think that's what we're sort of seeing, although we didn't see any DC movies this summer. Will we next summer? Will we see DC movie next summer?
Nope.
No, 2016. And then there's like 10 more coming out after that. So DC is coming, and they're bringing some firepower.
But now, would you say, as we transition to our next category, do you think Guardians was the best superhero of the summer? Movie of the summer.
Do I think it was the best superhero movie of the summer? You know what's so hard about the summer is that May feels like it was 2 years ago when you get to August.
Yes.
Instead of a couple of months ago.
I'd even like to go back to April. I would include Winter Soldier in this conversation. If you want.
We could.
If you needed to.
I would say Guardians of the Galaxy was the best movie of the summer. Best superhero movie of the summer. A close second for me personally would be X-Men Days of Future Past, because I just thought it was very ambitious of them to what they attempted. I thought they did a really good job mixing the two worlds. I thought they brought a lot more humor. I really loved how Wolverine, for once in his freaking life, was the comic relief in a movie. And
you're stealing my choice here. Stop.
I'm sorry. Okay. I say Guardians is the best, and then I start raving about X-Men Days of Future Past. But no, I do think Guardians was the best movie, the best superhero movie. It really delivered on a lot of really fun things. And you know, I'm a product of the '80s. I was Peter Quill's age. When Peter Quill was taken from Earth, I was about that same age, I think give or take a year or two. And that 1989, 88, 87 is what you really feel in this film, because that's when Peter Quill left Earth. And so a lot of his sensibilities are tied to that era when he was still a kid, just like me. And so someone at that same age, I think, could find a lot of things to relate to in Guardians of the Galaxy that maybe a 14 or 15-year-old kid these days may not relate to those same things, but they're still going to have a really fun time. It had that that comedic camaraderie that we saw in those 80s movies, those 80s teen movies, you know, like The Goonies and films like that, Star Wars. So I really felt that. I loved the world building. I loved the care that James Gunn took to so many of those scenes. The practical effects were really cool. And, you know, the villain I'm not crazy about. I mean, we talk about this after every Marvel movie. I feel like Marvel definitely has a villain problem. Right. And I hope that I think they're going to address it and create more villains that you want to invest in, because Ronan just didn't really do it as much for me. But, you know, the team I was sold on, and the soundtrack I love. And I haven't bought a movie soundtrack in a long time, but I went and got that one.
Nice.
And I love it, and I listen to it all the time. And I don't remember the last movie I did that for. So,
yeah, been a long time.
So I dug it, yeah. But you liked the Days of Future Past.
I did, and it's not because I disliked Guardians. I loved Guardians. I thought it was a lot of fun. I even, as everybody on this listening to this podcast knows, I'm a fan of what Mark Webb did with Spider-Man. But Days of Future Past just really connected with me and reminded me, more than anything, how much Bryan Singer understands those characters. I held on to the fact that I thought the first X-Men was probably the best superhero movie that we'd seen in a really long time. And I liked the first X-Men movie more than X2, for whatever reason. I just think it fits together better as a comic book movie, and I like the fact that it was the building of a team. And that's part of why I like Guardians a lot, too, is that it's the building of a team. It's part of the reason why I loved Avengers also. And then all the films since then, Thor the Dark World and Winter Soldier, were always about like alienating the hero and putting him in some sort of isolation. And when I saw Guardians, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's what I really like. I like the team aspect. I like the camaraderie. I like the fact that they have to rely on each other for different aspects. But and there's humor weaved in and out of that. And that's what I thought Days of Future Past really did. It was getting together a team to complete a mission, and everybody had a sort of component that they had to bring to it. The Quicksilver scene still stands out to me as such a fun and exciting and imaginative scene. Wolverine being able to be the sort of smartass glue that holds everything together. I love the first class team. I think Fassbender and McAvoy are so good in those performances.
They really are. They're great.
And so it was like anywhere you looked in that ensemble, you know, there was heavy hitters doing incredible things. And it got me really excited for X-Men Apocalypse, because I think that they can continue that momentum. And I was really excited for the future of that franchise. I think part of it spells into what some people are saying about Guardians too, is that it lacked the need for an origin story. We didn't have to sit through at least an act and a half of setting up who these people are. We just knew right off the bat, like, here are your X-Men characters in two different worlds. You knew both of them already, and it was able to really just hit the ground running from start to finish and be that kind of freight train. And I thought Guardians was that, and I definitely thought Days of Future Past was that. So, you know, both of those franchises seem really healthy to me right now. They both have new chapters coming already on the calendar, and I can't be more excited for both of them. I'm excited to see where each of them go.
I agree. They both had villain problems, and I hope that those problems are solved. But, and it's an interesting thing to bring up, too, because I feel like all of these superhero movies, with the exception of Loki, I keep him to the side because they did a tremendous job with Loki. But all of these superhero movies have villain problems. And it's like, but people still love them. We both still love these movies, despite their villain problems. And it makes you think, are the villains even necessary? You know, of course, the antagonist is necessary. But it's like, Do they think that they have a villain problem? And is that a problem in their heads if people don't like their villains?
Well, you know, like the Sentinels, I thought it was great to finally see Sentinels in an X-Men movie. But you're right. I don't remember the end game of Bolivar Trask necessarily, although I like Peter Dinklage. And here's the, like, not to keep going back to Batman Superman, but if you have a Batman Superman movie, do you even need Lex Luthor? You know, if the drive of that story is that Batman doesn't trust this new alien on the planet, why can't it just be that movie? Like, sometimes you're right. I feel like they clog up the works by introducing too many characters, and I don't know if a villain's going to even be important. Now, maybe Zack Snyder has a story that really relies on something Lex Luthor is doing, but yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think that the motivations of these villainous characters tends to stray, because even with Spider-Man, it's hard to justify a lot of things that Electro or the Green Goblin were doing. I enjoyed them as characters, but when people nitpick about what their motivations were, they're right. I mean,
yeah, they are right. They felt Schumacher-esque.
Yeah.
In the way that they weren't colored in completely.
Yeah.
A lot of these villains are. But that said, the future looks bright. I'm really looking forward to Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor. Right. I think that's a villain that, yeah, yes, he's an iconic villain, but I think you can definitely do a lot with him. And give people a villain that has a lot of depth to him. And also Ultron. Everything that I've heard about Ultron and James Spader, I'm really interested in. And Ultron, I feel like, is going to be... Yes, he's going to be this 8-foot-tall villain. Of course, I'm talking about the villain in the Avengers sequel, which comes out next May. But he's a very different kind of villain, and he's going to have these long Shakespearean monologues, which, coming out of the brain of Joss Whedon, are going to be really interesting to hear and to listen to and to watch. And so I think we're going to see a villain like we've never seen before in Age of Ultron, and that's I think it's going to be their strongest villain since Loki.
I hope so.
So.
I do, because it's a robot, and it's hard to make a robot, you know, interesting as a character. So
it is, but you have James Spader playing him, and you have Joss Whedon writing him.
Correct.
So that's why I feel pretty good about it. But let's move on from superhero movies to comedies. What was, you know, I feel like the summer is always known for its comedies. In recent years, it's R-rated comedies. I feel like R-rated comedies have dominated the summer season. They did again this year. We had a lot of R-rated comedies, from Neighbors to 22 Jump Street to Tammy to give me another one.
Sex Tape?
To Sex Tape.
Yep. What did we have just recently, too? Oh, this Let's Be Cops did
Let's,
okay.
Let's Be Cops.
Yeah.
Was another one. And so what do you feel like? I feel like even though we're all the way at the end of the summer, to be honest with you, I think the best comedy this summer breaks down between two, Neighbors and 22 Jump Street.
Yeah, I would say so also. I was really disappointed. Like, I didn't think that there was a good, solid... I like Neighbors. I don't want to crap on Neighbors. I thought it was really funny.
I like Neighbors. I feel like it, in some respect, it's a movie that peaks halfway through.
Yeah, probably.
You know, it's hard to keep... that's the hardest thing with these R-rated comedies, is to keep them... Keep that train going. I think 22 Jump Street in its finale is more successful than Neighbors in its finale. Of course, 22 Jump Street has the luxury of being an action comedy.
But the question is, like, who are today's comedians? You know, it seems like if, you know, Sacha Baron Cohen doesn't have a movie out based around a new character, or, because, I mean, what is Adam Sandler? Like, are we looking at Adam Sandler for a comedy franchise? Are we looking at?
I think we're looking at Seth Rogen now.
Yeah,
I think Seth Rogen, if you look at comedic actors and actresses at the top of their game right now, putting out successful movies, funny movies,
right?
I think Seth Rogen and his little crew.
Yeah.
I think that's the key. I think we're out of that age of the Eddie Murphy, the Mike Myers, the Adam Sandler, like that one guy where the movie is just that guy. And you don't have to put much around him because it's about him.
Right.
I think it's more about Seth Rogen. And Seth Rogen is not... If you just put Seth Rogen and then two or three... Yeah, I kind of know who they are. Maybe it's not as successful. But when you have Seth Rogen and then you put a James Franco over here and then you put, you know, a Jonah Hill, you know, he's got... He can plug in a number of different variables of
right,
familiar
right.
faces that you know from other movies that you really liked. And I think it's more about that now. I think it's more about the comedic ensemble than it is about the comedian.
Well, and maybe it's, you know, I'm not saying that Jason Segel isn't going to be that guy anymore. Maybe he will be. But Sex Tape wasn't that funny. You know, it's a lot of times people just miss. They do. They swing for something and they miss.
Well, and you look at Tammy. I think Tammy was still going off Melissa McCarthy. Like, she's selling it. It's all Melissa McCarthy. But, you know, a film like Neighbors or 22 Jump Street is a little bit more successful because it's not just all about the one person.
But I was waiting for, like, an independent to sort of come up, too. Like, you know, we had Nick Offerman in Kings of Summer, you know, last year gave still, to me, one of the funniest performances that we saw in a comedic film all year. And, you know, you go back a while to find something offbeat like, you know, Four Lions or something like that, where it, the word of mouth sort of got passed around of, you have to see this movie in theaters. It's really, really funny. And I don't think we had that this year. Can you think of like a smaller sort of under the radar film that was a really funny comedy?
Maybe They Came Together.
Yeah, that got some buzz.
The Paul Rudd Polar one. I think that it kind of deconstructs the romantic comedy in some fun ways. I really like David Wayne.
Obvious Child also got a lot of buzz.
Obvious Child.
Yeah, but that's sort of been kicking around since Sundance. So I don't know if it's a summer movie. It's just that it sort of rolled out a little bit.
I personally liked Wish I Was Here, the Zach Braff movie.
Yeah, yeah.
They bill it as a drama, but it's a comedy drama, especially if you're a parent, especially if you're a dad.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of things that you can relate to in that movie, and I am someone who is not completely turned off by Zach Braff's sensibilities, even though he is, you know, indie cliche to the max. He does have some fun things to say, and his dialogue is witty, and I like his characters, and yeah. I am a dad, I am Jewish. There are a lot of things about that movie that spoke directly to me. So I would put that in there.
But in general, I think the field for comedies was a little bit disappointing, and I think it peaked after. I think Neighbors and Jump Street were the two, like you said, if we're choosing between, it comes down between those two, because Tammy was a bit of a disappointment, Sex Tape was a bit of a disappointment, and nothing really rose up, you know, because we look for comedy now in our tent poles. You know, Guardians was a funny movie, and I think that the bigger sort of blockbusters are trying to weave humor into them, and so maybe it's just getting harder and harder to get a comedy greenlit. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I would also throw What If in there, the Daniel Radcliffe Zoe Kazan movie.
Yeah, I saw that last night.
It's charming.
First time. That was called the F word for a long time, wasn't it?
Yes, I saw it when it was the F word at Toronto last year.
What a super sweet movie. Those two have such good chemistry together.
They do, and Adam Driver, especially if you like him, he sort of wears his girl's persona in this movie and steals a lot of scenes, so I like that. But speaking of smaller movies, we can segue to our next section, which are the smaller movies that maybe you missed, some of these smaller gems, because, you know, Sundance Film Festival and the South by Southwest Film Festival and the Berlin Film Festival happen in January, Sundance, February, Berlin, and then March is South by Southwest. So a lot of these films that are picked up for distribution out of these film festivals, they debut during the summer season. And so we got a lot of those films this summer. And, you know, what was the best smaller movie? We just mentioned a few of them that you should definitely check out. What If is one of them. Obvious Child is one of them. Seek out those movies. They Came Together. Watch those if you haven't seen them yet. But smaller movies.
Yeah, and we both loved each of our selections. So
we did.
I'll go with Boyhood. And I feel like enough people have been beating the drum for Boyhood that it's actually doing pretty well. And I think it's going to have a strong push through the awards race. I think people are going to constantly keep reminding voters and people attending these award screenings that this is a movie that needs to be considered for Best Picture, for Best Director. And word of mouth on it was just so strong. The more people checked it out and realized what Richard Linklater had completed. And for people who don't know anything about the film, it's a 12-year experiment where he essentially got the same ensemble together to tell the story of this family and essentially the life of this young boy, Mason, from the time he enters kindergarten until the time he leaves for college. And they use the same actors, and they filmed them once a year for 12 years. And it's staggering the amount of things that it gets right, and it's incredible when you think about the amount of things that could have gone wrong over the course of the process of it. And it's just it touches you and moves you in so many different ways, because no matter who you are, no matter what kind of life you're living, there's something in Boyhood that I think you can connect to, because they touch on broken marriages, and they touch on a lot of the growing pains that boys and girls go through. Just an incredible coming-of-age movie that is told in such a way that I'm not sure anything else can ever rival it. And if you haven't seen it, please, God, go see it now.
Yeah, my favorite part about that movie is that he doesn't, like, put it into chapters, or he doesn't employ any of these kind of gimmicks to get him through those 12 years. He just seamlessly goes from scene to scene, and you never really know. Right. You know, the only cue that we're in a different time is that the character looks a little bit different than they did in the scene just before this one.
Right.
And so they're going on with their lives, and it's almost like we're just spectators, and we have to figure it out on the go. They're not stopping with a card to say, 1 year later.
Right.
Two years later. Yeah.
Actually, use great musical cues to sort of tell you.
Really great musical cues.
Yeah.
Another movie with a great soundtrack, and a movie that I'm still feeling. Out of all the movies of this summer, especially if you're someone who likes to go to the movies and feel something,
right,
you know, and walk out and just kind of feel a little heartache, feel a little something in there, you know, shed a tear, kind of, you know, fills up with some emotion. This is a movie you really feel. And I thought it was really spectacular. I can't imagine it not being nominated for Best Picture on the execution of it alone.
Sure, absolutely.
So we'll see what happens when it does get there. My favorite small movie this summer is Chef.
Yes.
Jon Favreau's movie.
Such a great film.
I think it is the year's best date movie. Because I wrote about this recently, because it's being re-released in theaters over Labor Day weekend, mainly, I think, to kind of drum up some awards buzz around the film. I don't know if it'll get any kind of recognition.
No,
in awards, but
hopefully, maybe at like the Independent Spirit Awards, or
yes,
if it fits under those rules.
Yes, I agree. But I really like this film. I think it's a great date movie, because it's a film that can tie into your entire night. You can build a whole night around this film because of its food moments, a lot of really great food montages. But it's also a film that sort of doesn't go the route that you think it's going to go. It's a film that starts off and it beats its main character into the ground, and then the rest of the movie is literally him climbing up out of that hole, and that's it. And I don't want to spoil it, you know, by telling you that by revealing anything. But if you haven't seen it yet, but I really like that. It is a true feel good movie, and you walk out of there feeling great, and you're feeling hungry. And you can go, like I say, go to a great Cuban restaurant if you have one in your neighborhood, or go to a place that makes a terrific grilled cheese sandwich, because those are the two kinds of foods I think you're going to walk out of this movie sort of having a hankering for.
Right.
And it's just one of those films that leaves you feeling good.
Well, and I think it's one of those films also, like Boyhood, where positive word of mouth from people who gave it a chance helped power it to, you know, the box office success that it's doing. Another film that, like, we talked about Snowpiercer before this, and it seems like positive word of mouth is helping that film too. I'm really encouraged that there are a number of films this summer that screened for people gave them a chance, checked them out, and then word of mouth actually helped them increase their business, where the trend this summer has been open a blockbuster big and then watch it tail off severely. These films that we're sort of spotlighting, even Obvious Child, built their word of mouth through grassroots campaigns, and people just kept it responding. Chef had a really good Twitter campaign where they used hashtags. Obvious Child had a great Twitter campaign where, before most of the screenings, the director came on and said, "Hey, talk about our movie. You know, use this hashtag to spread the word." Really smart in today's day and age to help these smaller films get in front of larger audiences.
Yeah, I agree. At Snowpiercer, I feel like it's VOD. The fact that it went to VOD, I think that really helped the movie.
Yep, definitely.
And so we'll segue. We're reaching our 30-minute mark, usually when we say goodbye to each other, but we need to pick a best movie of the summer, Sean. We need to say that there is a best movie of the summer, and this is that movie. We didn't really get into too many disappointments bad movies or the worst movies of the summer, because I personally don't need to linger on the movies that weren't that good. If we did not talk about them, put two and two together.
Yeah, that's too easy. That seems to be too easy.
But yeah, let's focus on the positive. The best movie of the summer.
I mean, I have to say it's Boyhood. Yeah. If only because to me it's the best movie of the year that I've seen so far. And but it's not a summer movie. It just happened to be rolling out further in the summer. So if I'm going to say the best summer movie, to me it was still Days of Future Past. That did everything that I kind of wanted a summer movie to do. It brought back a franchise that I was really in love with and it felt was sort of falling apart because the Wolverine movies weren't performing up to snuff and X-Men The Last Stand was not the best movie in the world. And so it reminded me of how powerful the X-Men characters can be in an on-screen franchise. So I'd say Boyhood, but that's sort of been around for a while. So I'd also say X-Men Days of Future Past.
Yeah, well, if you did a 1-2 punch, I'll do a 1-2 punch. I disagree. I think Boyhood is a summer movie.
Okay.
I think because when you, Boyhood, I think it started rolling out into theaters in early July, and it's right around that July, right after 4th of July. You know, the summer, even as the years grow on, the summertime, if there's any time that's going to sort of feel nostalgic, that's going to sort of get you thinking about growing up.
Right.
And the times that you had and when you were off of school and the crazy summer jobs that you had. I feel like out of all the seasons, it's summer that makes you feel like a kid again, especially right. when you're looking at all these kids that are out of school and they're all driving their bikes all over your neighborhood. And you sort of think back to, oh, when I was 13 right now, I was playing Manhunt in my neighborhood with my friends, or you know, we got on our bikes and we were chasing down the ice cream truck. And so I feel like Boyhood is the perfect summer movie. It is the perfect movie to sort of bring you back to those days and to that time. And because this is a time when we are feeling nostalgic about our past and our childhood. And so I think that was great. And, you know, the two punch would be Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
Because I feel like talking about my own nostalgia and my own childhood, Guardians of the Galaxy was the kind of film that I grew up just loving and following and buying the soundtrack and singing the songs and wanting the action figures for. And I was really impressed that in this day and age where it's all about the built-in franchises, the existing characters we're already familiar with, books that are already popular, to see these brand new characters sort of take on a life of their own and find gigantic fan bases, this Rocket Raccoon and this Groot and Drax and Gamora and Star-Lord, it really made me feel good. That movies like this can still exist, yes, but that we can introduce new characters to people, and it's okay. We could find success showing somebody something new that they haven't seen yet, and something that they're going to be a real fan for. You know, and I feel like these days, you know, our big summer move, they don't make big memorable summer movies. I feel like that they did when we were kids, Sean.
Yes.
And I feel like Guardians of the Galaxy is one of those, and it's going to be one of those for a long time, I think. So I feel like the kid these days now, when they get to be our age, I feel like they're going to look back and Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be a cool movie that they had when they were kids.
I would agree, 100%.
So let's end there. If there's a word that defines the summer, it's fun. If there's a movie that defines the summer, it's Guardians of the Galaxy. Sean's favorite movie this summer is X-Men Days of Future Past. Mine is also Boyhood and Guardians of the Galaxy. And Sean, I had a great time recording this podcast with you this summer.
This was a lot of fun. We got into some interesting angles of some really exciting films. We gushed about films that we were really moved by, and we hopefully spotlighted a few interesting movies for you guys to check out on your own. If you disagree with our picks, of course, weigh in. We definitely want to hear from you guys and find out what you loved this summer. But it definitely seems like when all the dust settles, the superhero genre is still going very, very strong, and you can also find some really fun and exciting things in the art house circuit.
Yeah, I agree. And now things get interesting as the festival circuit begins. A lot of awards movies, the Oscar season.
Remind me.
Here it comes, and it's going to begin in a couple of weeks. Sean and I will both be at the Toronto International Film Festival. There's a lot of movies premiering there, a lot of movies that could potentially be up for some Oscars. We're going to be podcasting like we were last year. So many movies. Last year, just to give you a quick preview, last year at Toronto, Sean and I saw movies like Gravity, Dallas Buyers Club, 12 Years a Slave, August Osage County.
Yep.
We saw a lot. A lot of the movies. Prisoners.
Yep.
So those are the types of movies. And all of those movies, with the exception of Prisoners, were up for Best Picture. So it should be interesting.
It does feel like the launch pad for the Oscar season. Telluride right before it, Toronto with all the things going, Venice, and then we'll continue into New York's going to be a good festival this year, too. I may actually come up and check out some of that stuff with Gone Girl and Inherent Vice and a few other big-time filmmakers coming. So.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, we're going to be talking about them. Sean, thanks a lot for being on the Summer Movies Podcast. If we're both kicking around next year, maybe we'll do it again. And thank you for listening. And I hope that you guys enjoyed your summer at the movies and that you saw movies that challenged you, that made you laugh, that made you cry, that made you had a good time, because that's what the summer movie season is all about, in my opinion. So enjoy the rest of your summer at the movies, and as well as you do, Sean, too.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Bye.